Welcome to Global Journalist on KBIA. This is the program that says mid-Missourians, indeed many Americans, are interested in international news. I'm Stuart Lurie of the Missouri School of Journalism. The fabled Bali in Indonesia has been known as the Island of the Gods. Last weekend, the anti-gods struck a blow there that rocked the world. A huge bombing in a resort city at a time when it was teeming with pleasure-seeking tourists. More than 180 revelers from around the world were killed. The bombing was carefully planned, well executed. No group has taken responsibility. Was this the work of Al-Qaeda, which was responsible, we think, for the 9/11 killings in the United States? There was another big bombing today in the Philippines. Might we be seeing an outbreak of serial terrorism similar to the serial sniping that has killed 9 innocent civilians in Washington in the past 2 weeks? Did United States intelligence services have advance warning that Indonesia and Australia ignored? Is there any relationship between this terrorist act and the Bush administration's determination to go to war in Iraq? To help us understand all this today, we have in Washington Karen DeYoung, associate editor of the Washington Post, and in Jakarta, Jerry Norton, Indonesia bureau chief for Reuters. Let's start in Indonesia. Jerry Norton, can you please bring us up to date on the investigation there and how it's going as far as the Bali bombing is concerned?
Well, the latest thing that is out of Bali is that they're questioning 4 people intensively, they say, but they have not actually declared these people official suspects or said that they're detaining them officially, which is the way the Indonesian system goes here. And they have, at this point, not said that they have identified a specific group. The chief security minister was in Bali today and said it could be foreigners, it could be Indonesians, or it could be a combination of the two.
Yeah, is the Indonesian government placing any blame on Muslim terrorist groups?
Not at this point in terms of specific responsibility or the government officially saying that. You have had one government senior government official, the defense minister, who has said he believes it's linked with Al-Qaeda. But the government as a whole has not said that. And again, chief security minister, who is a more powerful figure in the cabinet today, said that they have not determined who specifically is responsible or whether it's foreign, domestic, or both.
We had a situation earlier today in the Philippines where I think 5 or 6 people were killed in a bombing. Might there be any relationship between the two?
Well, I mean, this certainly, although, as I said, the government hasn't officially said it is Al-Qaeda linked here, that is the popular theory, the most popular theory, and that was also said about the incident in the Philippines.
Yeah. Karen,
specifically, in both cases, it's not simply Al-Qaeda, but a regional group that's believed to have a tie to Al-Qaeda, but does concentrate its activities in Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm. Karen DeYoung, The Washington Post had a story yesterday saying that the United States government had warned Indonesia that there was the danger of terrorist acts there. That story, I think, has now been denied. What did happen?
I think what they've said is there have been a series of general warnings, sort of similar to what happened before 9/11. The intelligence and security services here have said that they were on a heightened state of alert. They had some reason to believe something was going to happen, but nothing specific enough to give specific warnings about. I think that's what they're saying in the case of Indonesia, that they had fairly specific warning that something was going to happen, and this was quite within, I think, a week or several days even before the bombing occurred, but nothing definite enough to say, watch this place, or here's where we think these people are.
Yeah. There was a story also overnight from Australia saying that Prime Minister John Howard has admitted that U.S. intelligence identified Bali as a possible target of a terrorist attack. The story quotes Howard as saying that Australia listened to the warning and then decided to disregard it and not warn Australians against going to Bali.
Well, I think I haven't seen that particular story, but I think this is one of the issues that's debated in Washington all the time. If you don't have a specific threat about a specific place, how do you tell people not to go to an entire country? Do you upset the lives of tens of thousands of people for something that you're not totally sure of? And I think those are always things that are weighed here, and I'm sure in Australia too.
Yeah, there's even a little similarity, isn't there, between these kinds of acts and what's going on in suburban Washington these days, where a couple of weeks ago, after these serial killings started, it was decided not to try to change the way of life in suburban Washington.
Well, I must say there have been some changes.
Yes.
Schools, my own children's schools, children are not allowed outside. There's no outside recess. All sporting events have been canceled. All the soccer leagues and the baseball leagues and everything have just been called off for the rest of the season. I think people are leery. They've changed their habits a lot in terms of where they go and how much they expose themselves.
Right. The government is the local governments taking any steps to try to change lifestyles in the area, or is this all being done by people themselves?
I don't think they've advised people in particular to do anything. One of the difficulties, obviously, about this is that it's random, or apparently random, both in terms of the people who have been shot, but also in terms of where they've been shot. It's, there are many counties and jurisdictions surrounding the actual city of Washington. It's one big metropolitan area of about 4 million people. And this shooter or shooters have touched on almost all of them at this point, at one time or another. And so people who live in one area and thought that they were safe now don't feel so safe. I don't think anyone anywhere feels safe around here.
Jerry Norton, what about Indonesia? Have people changed the way they go about living their lives throughout Indonesia as a result of the Bali bombings?
Well, there certainly have been some things in Jakarta that have changed. You have luxury hotels now that have security guards checking under cars as they come in with mirrors, opening the trunks, looking inside, looking for ID, which they didn't do before. You have a lot of the office buildings where foreigners work especially now have security guards with metal detectors. So there certainly has been some enhancement of security in that sense. Of course, the U.S. Embassy here underwent a major enhancement of its security around September 11 when they had some of these first warnings of possible violence. In terms of how much people have changed their everyday lives, I don't know. I would say in Jakarta per se, I don't think there's a huge change so far. But a lot of people are considering, as these warnings are issued by governments, whether they should leave if they're foreigners. And most of the threats are seen as directed at foreigners.
Yeah, Jerry, have you been to Bali since the bombings?
I have not. We've had two text reporters went down there immediately after the bombings. One of them just came back today. We still have one text person down there and several of our TV and picture people.
How do they describe the situation to you?
Well, you still have a lot of tourists did leave immediately after if they could get on planes. Others stayed, but they did change their habits. A lot of them kept a pretty low profile after the incident. And the ironic thing here is, not ironic, but Bali was, Indonesia per se, has had a lot of economic problems. Tourism has lagged. There have been incidents of violence over other issues over the last few years, but Bali has always been the exception, the peaceful area of the country and the one that was popular with tourists, and all the political troubles of the last few years, it was like a haven of stability and calm, which suggests that actually this was a well-chosen target to really hit Indonesia in one of its few economic areas of strength.
When you look at the pictures of Bali, where the bombing occurred, the devastation is just overwhelming. It indicates that there had to be a very large bomb there. How did the bombers get all of this equipment to that island without being spotted?
I'm not sure. I don't think it required a huge amount of equipment. Basically, they seem to, according to the latest theories and evidence, use a car bomb and one that was actually on top of a vehicle rather than under or inside. That's what they say from the way the explosion went and so forth. With a smaller bomb first that may have been aimed at distracting people or getting them out where the bigger bomb could have a maximum effect. And using C4, which is a form of plastic explosive, relatively undetectable. The military has said they don't think it's something that could have come from them, but I would think they have C4, and I don't think it would be impossible to get from them, and there could be other sources. And Indonesia is a huge country that sprawls across several thousand kilometers, about as big from one end to the other as the U.S. So it's like 17,000 islands, so it's not exactly a country that is easy to police as far as borders are concerned.
Mm-hmm. When you say C4, can you describe for our listeners just what you're talking about?
Sorry, I didn't hear that question.
I say, when you say the explosive was C4, can you give our listeners some indication of just what it is that you're talking about?
Well, I think C4 is kind of a standard plastic explosive, which means you can kind of shape and mold it, which makes it popular for this kind of
And also don't need a huge quantity, I think, to have a large effect.
So just a small amount can do the damage of some other kind of explosive, a fertilizer-based explosive, for example.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I should note that...
Go ahead.
Now, I was just going to say, they do say that the evidence is that that was a very sophisticated attack, which is one of the reasons for speculating it was Al-Qaeda or some people who really knew what they were doing and did a lot of planning.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have to take a break right now. This is Global Journalist on KBIA. I'm Stuart Lurie, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Global Journalist. You may listen to this program again, ask questions, make comments by going to www.globaljournalist.org or here in Mid-Missouri by calling us at 573-882-9641. Karen DeYoung, do you see any relationship between what happened in Bali last weekend and the Bush administration's apparent determination to go to war against Iraq?
I think there have been two basic reactions here in Washington within the administration. Some people, and I must say these are largely people who don't think it's a good idea to have a unilateral strategy in Iraq, think it's becoming a little too much to handle all at once. I think that they worry that the administration is not going to be able to be as effective as it should be in trying to deal with the global terrorist threat and deal with the war in Iraq at the same time and continue to operate in Afghanistan. Now, other people who I think are prevailing at the moment within the administration say all the more reason. Their basic case against Iraq is that there's a possibility Iraq will transfer its weapons of mass destruction to terrorist groups, and the same kind of groups that it believes is responsible for these attacks, and therefore it's become even more urgent to move against Iraq.
Some people in the administration believe that there is a connection between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda.
Right.
What is the general thinking in Washington on that point?
The CIA has given its intelligence reporting, obviously, to the administration and to members of Congress, certain members of Congress, and said that based on past reporting about people's movements over the past decade, information that they've gotten from defectors and people that they have captured from Al-Qaeda, that there's some reason to believe that there are ties in some way, although they haven't different... You can draw whatever conclusions you want from this analysis. Now, some people in the administration, in particular Defense Secretary Rumsfeld and the President also, have decided that these intelligence reports are enough to prove a connection. Other people are not so sure and say the administration really hasn't made its case yet.
Karen, the Washington Post has always been very strong on covering the intelligence community in Washington and around the world. After September 11 last year, the feeling was that the intelligence community had let the country down in a big way. How much improvement has there been in the past year, particularly in the CIA's ability to know what is going on in the Arab-speaking world?
The complaint largely was that there were lots of bits of information that, if you put them all together, you would have been in a much better position to predict what was going to happen. Their response to that is that... there was no particular reason to put them all together, and yes, there were some failures in communication, but overall, they were doing the best they could, and that no reasonable person could have expected them to put it together. As you've seen in the congressional hearings over the past month or so, I think the members of Congress have been very critical, and their investigators have been very critical of the failure to put these things together, and also of the failure, which I think is largely ongoing, of the various intelligence and security agencies to communicate with each other. The CIA and the FBI historically don't talk to each other very much. There's not a lot of sharing of information. There have been a lot of turf battles. And while the senior officials in these agencies argue that they have become, unfortunately, aware of the level of these difficulties and have moved to address them, I think there's not a lot of evidence that they've overcome these difficulties yet.
Yeah, the other thing, though, was, if I recall correctly, a debate over whether or not we had enough human intelligence.
Right. I think that they, you know, the CIA has argued, I think with some reason, that these are the most difficult groups to infiltrate, that we don't have a lot of Arabic speakers. And one of the problems they've had is that they were not even able, although we have a lot of listening devices, and there are agencies here that do nothing else but run tapes of intercepted communications all day and all night, that these things were backing up because there weren't enough people to translate them, there weren't enough analysts that understood how these groups operated and that would be able actually to catch something important, even if they had managed to capture the information. They've made a big effort to recruit more people. There's a big effort to recruit native Arabic speakers in this country, but that's been undermined to some degree to the fact that native Arabic speakers are not feeling particularly friendly, a lot of them, toward the intelligence agencies in this country at the moment.
Yeah. Jerry Norton, can you tell us a little bit about the American military presence in Indonesia and whether or not it has been involved in the investigation?
Well, there really isn't a military presence here in any significant way beyond the sort of military attachés at the U.S. Embassy. There has been... there is involvement in the investigation from the FBI, and in fact a number of other countries besides the U.S. have sent teams to help in the investigation of this particular incident. A lot of the intelligence that came out before is And I think that was the root of the reports mentioned earlier that were warnings about dangers here. Actually came from an Arab who is a confessed member of Al-Qaeda who had been operating here and was captured by Indonesian authorities and then turned over to U.S. intelligence for questioning.
Mm-hmm. Is this source, is he still in Indonesia or has he been moved out of the country?
No, he was captured here, but pretty much immediately sent to the United States or turned over to the United States.
Mm-hmm. But there has been talk of sending American troops to Indonesia. I guess from what you say, that has not yet happened in any big way.
Oh, no, that hasn't happened, and that hasn't happened. And Indonesia, I don't think there's much enthusiasm for that. They would like more American aid to the military here in cooperation, but the government, although generally quite friendly to the U.S., I think is not inclined at all to ask for that or want it, and it would, I think, not be particularly well received.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that the, if I could just say, you know, the military assistance, U.S. military assistance to Indonesia was cut off a number of years ago because of human rights and other concerns. The administration, the Bush administration...
Yeah, the U.S. has,
Right, has been eager to reestablish that relationship on some level, and when Secretary of State Colin Powell,
they very
was there,
much want the aid to come back. But,
yeah, was he was there?
And, great presence of troops.
Yeah, in August, I guess they did make a preliminary agreement to start a very very minor training program restart with the Indonesian military.
Yeah, and that has not yet started. I thought there had been some training missions there, but I guess not.
Well, I think the training is more not missions here. It's sending Indonesians to the United States, actually, for training.
Mm-hmm. How is the new Indonesian president, Mrs. Megawati Sukarno, bearing up under all of this?
Well, she seems to be bearing up. She is not the most... She's fairly reticent, does not say a great deal or make all that many public comments about things. And this has been another example. She did go down to Bali immediately after the incident, but did not say much, kind of a sharp contrast to when Bush went to New York, and has not said too much. She did make some comments today and about an anti-terror decree that the president is about to put into effect. There's been a lot of pressure in the past for Indonesia to take some stiff action against terrorist elements here, and this seems to have galvanized them a bit, and this anti-terrorism decree is one thing.
Yeah. The people who are believed to be leaders of terrorist groups in Indonesia operate pretty much in the open, don't they? I mean, as...
One person in particular who has been connected does operate in the open. Intelligence agencies in other countries have linked him to terrorism. He consistently denies it. The U.S. In this report from the CIA that related to this person who had been turned over to them and captured here also made that link. But so far, he has not been arrested and is at large.
Mm-hmm. Karen, is there anything you want to say or can say about increased in surveillance in Indonesia?
No, I think Jerry's in a much, much better position to know about that than I am. I think it, you know, it's been a sort of touchy...
I'm sorry, Karen, go ahead.
A sort of touchy situation in terms of the U.S. presence there in for intelligence and the military. I think that there was a widespread feeling here that since 9/11 that Indonesia was one of the least cooperative countries in the region, and yet had in the view of many people here the largest presence. As Jerry was saying, it's an enormously difficult country to get a handle on because it's very dispersed over a huge area. It's a huge country, and I think that there are political pressures on the government there that have made it difficult to crack down or look deeply into certain people. At the same time,
what you have here is a very large Muslim population, most of whom are moderates, but that doesn't mean that they necessarily agree with the war on terrorism or are not worried that it's really a cover for an attack on Islam in general, and they disagree with a lot of policies of the U.S. in areas like the Middle East. So I think there is fear of a backlash from a crackdown on the more militant groups.
If I may change the subject, Karen, we have 2 minutes left. The other big story coming from the Far East today is the North Korean admission that it has been involved in trying to build nuclear weapons. What is likely to be the American reaction to that?
Well, I think they don't quite know how to react at the moment. They had, in a visit early this month by a senior State Department official that was supposed to initiate a resumed dialogue between the two, they brought intelligence information that they believed demonstrated that the North Koreans were up to something that they shouldn't be up to, and the North Koreans initially denied it and then came back the next day and said, yep, it's true, we have that and more, and here's what we have. And so the Americans at this point, I think, are not quite sure whether how to react to this, whether this is kind of heightens the tension and means that the relations between the two are going to slip again into an ultimate deep freeze, or if this is part of a new opening by North Korea to kind of lay everything on the table. They've sent this senior official back to the region. I think he got there probably this morning, for consultations with China and Japan and South Korea, who are our partners in this issue. And I think they're still trying to figure out how to react to it.
Okay. Karen, that is a good way to end this program. We are out of time. I would like to thank both our guests, Karen D. Young, Associate Editor of The Washington Post, and Jerry Norton, Indonesian Bureau Chief of Reuters in Jakarta. Our director is Pat Akers, and our producer, Sarah Andrea Fajardo. For all, I'm Stuart Lurie, Global Journalist. We'll be back next week.